The name of the group, The Turks, with the Eddie Freeman Orchestra, I'm a Fool. This record came out in 1966, and I thought that I'd play it because I'm a fool. I was watching some things on the internet yesterday that shook me to my core when I see how people hate. And I've never understood hatred on a level that would bring about the end of another person's life. It is beyond me. I listened to it must have been when I was in the Army. This particular recording was made of black soldiers in Vietnam hating and talking about how they were going to hate and how that hate would be lived out against white people. Same kind of thing from white people. And today it appears, man, wait a minute. I have to go to the doctor this morning. It's my annual time for a checkup, you know. So I'll go and they'll tell me this and tell me that. And then I got to go for a bone density exam sometime next week. If I live, you know. You know, a man wants to live. A man wants to fulfill his destiny. I still got tons of work to do. Not here in the office because I'm throwing out most of the stuff. I'm clearing out my office today because having a little gathering tomorrow here at my home. Some friends want to come by and say happy birthday and have a potluck. If they come by, I'm not cooking. I'm just cleaning. Just getting ready for my guests to come by and celebrate my 75 years. But what is there to celebrate? There's nothing to celebrate. I Let's stop playing the blame game. If our families are messed up, if our culture is messed up, if black people's lives are messed up, it has to do with, as I said the other day, the authority of the parent being taken away, man. My God, Reggie came by yesterday and he told me, oh, PJ, you can't chastise your grandchildren the way you used to when you were a grandparent. He said, they'll call children's services on you and have you arrested. What, my own grandchildren? What? I would rather sit down and have a conversation with my grandchildren and say, if that were plausible, and I never had this conversation with my grandchildren because it would have been unthinkable for me to have a conversation like this. If you ever call the po-po on granddad because granddad spanked you because you were knocking over things in my house, breaking it, and you wouldn't stop when I told you to stop. You just kept breaking everything. Then you went to the china cabinet and started taking the china out and breaking it, saying, I can do anything I want to do, and you can't do anything to me, and I never liked this stuff anyhow because Lola bought it and you didn't, and so I'm going to break it up. And let's say that the grandchild is 9 or 10 years old, all right? Goes through a tantrum and start tearing up things in the house. Now, what is the first thing that you think I'm going to do? I'm going to grab the kid. And whether it be a boy or a girl, I'm going to grab them. And I'm putting this on my webcast because I don't care who hears it. I'm going to grab the kid. And I'm going to apply some pressure from my hand to their shoulder or arm or body in whichever way that I possibly can in order to stop the livid destruction of my personal belongings. Now, if I leave a bruise, I intended to leave a bruise to let my grandchild know, you're not doing that bullshit in front of me in my house. Now, you know, and I'm not going to use that adage, I'm going to whoop your butt before the police get in and do it. I'm not going to do that. I don't hate my grandchild. I don't hate anyone. I deplore hatred against human beings. But as I devour this pretty good cup of coffee this morning, and I think about some of the things that I've been watching, and you know, the internet is a wonderful tool because you can go to it, and I don't have a regular TV hooked up in my house, but you can go on this internet and just type in any subject you want to see on YouTube, and all of the particulars that come up, that it's up there and you can look at it. And I've been looking at, someone has been putting old films up of the way things used to operate and to be conducted years ago. And it's quite astonishing to me to see that hatred has grown on a level, and ignorance of adults have grown on a level. I am so sick of hearing black people blame, now hear me now, white people, oh God, blaming white people for the calamity that the black people, I'm a black man. I know a lot of you don't want to think that I am because I don't sound like it. No, that picture of me on the website is me. That's me. I'm an African American. I am a black man born in this country. I am an American. I'm not a South American. I'm not a Latin American. I am a Black American, an Afro-American. I don't care what Jesse Peterson or any of them says. I am an Afro-American ancestor. Ancestors were slaves. I know nothing beyond my grandmother and grandfather on both sides of my family. I know nothing about my family. I don't want to get in touch with that. I don't need to get in touch with it. If I did, it would cause me great pride. I mean, really, to know where I came from, where my seed, my lineage came from. I can't hate like some people do. I can't. I've never tried. I don't know how. You know, the question comes to me, John, if someone got you and they were torturing you, you remember those movies, Saw 1, Saw 2, Saw 3, Saw 4, and all that stuff. And he said, John, if someone were really torturing you and doing that to you, would you strike back? I probably would because of the pain. God, I'd say, stop it. I'd strike back, but I wouldn't be striking back in hatred. I'd be striking back in terms of, stop the pain. You can't, you're harming me. But man, I've seen hate now in the citizenry of my living institutions, my countrymen. First of all, let me say this. Take responsibility for the mess that you procured and you started and you did. You know, I start off with this record by the Turks, I'm a Fool. See, and if you listen to the words of the song, you say, I'm a fool because I'm going to love you. And see, and that's the way I am about humans. I was in the Army during the Vietnam slaughters. European countries have always been bloodthirsty, money-raping, power-seeking criminals going all over the world. The first that I learned about it was the Belgians, what they did in the Congo, King Leopold. Remember that clown? Let us not forget the Portuguese, the Brits, the French, the Germans. It's kind of good to look at Africa today and see that some of the countries are stepping up. I have the internet and I go to the African websites and I see all the legislators dressed in their ethnic garb, in their constitutional government halls. There's a sense of pride there at Black people with money, because these are the people that run the country. They have money. And at times they send some of their children over here to be educated, and then they go back. And I like that, you know, they send them to America to be educated in the ways of the Westerners because of the abject freedom that their children can experience over here. So foreigners can come over here, get an education, sharpen their abilities to live decent. And when you look at black people's lives here, we are without excuse. We live in the richest country in the world. Literally the richest country in the world. And let me give you an idea about what change does, okay? I'm just glancing at my computer as it changes pictures here. And there was a picture of the church building that I preached in. That was on 976 East Jefferson Boulevard. Now they build brand new condos in the very spot. The building does not exist anymore. Building that was built by a handful of black people. These black people brought money every week. I know because I saw my grandparents do it. I saw other friends of mine, their grandparents did it, and other people. And I'll never forget when they had the burning of the deed. You know, they had finally paid off the church building. And it was a wonderful time. And now to think that the building is gone, the heritage is gone, and please don't tell me about, I'm talking about what J.B. Stanley built. And I had taken a little pride in myself to keep it going. I said, this is black religion. This is, now when you have a discussion with the millennials about black religion, it's not pertinent. It's not pertinent at all. So things have changed. I understand that. But the hatred, I noticed it last year when I was watching the Aretha Franklin funeral, what church had become. It's become a big circus, something embarrassing. You know, if you think of a person that belonged to the Protestant church dying, and or even the Catholic church and dying, and they had their funeral or their home going, so to say, they wouldn't allow such behavior in an auditorium that was called a sanctuary. There was behavior going on unseemingly. Evil. Black people need to take responsibility for their own debauchery. If your sons are in prison, and I'm talking about the ones that are legitimately locked up, I'm not talking about all black men, because there's a large majority of black men that are locked up in prison that have no business being there. It's one thing I can extol Trump for. He signs a petition to let some of us out that never belonged in there. And I'm happy to say that. But some of us should be locked up. And you know, I think about life the way it is, I often wonder, what are we going to become? What are we going to become? Just browsing around in my head, you know, just throwing it around, throwing it out there. I'm not going to hate. I'm not going to hate. Everybody talks about, well, if the revolution comes. Look, in this country, if people start, if the bloodbath starts, because you can see these suggestions on our TV movies, Netflix, Hulu, and Bulu, and everything else. They're trying to plant the idea. I'm not going to start killing my neighbors. And I hope they don't come down here and try to kill me. I would pray that I would be able to die at a ripe old age. And, you know, I used to say I don't want to live this long. Now I don't say that because I'm going to love me some brothers. I am. And sisters, too. But I'm not going to jump on the hate bandwagon. I'm not going to do that. I don't mean to talk about this subject matter all day because I know you guys have a lot of things that you have to do too. You don't need to hear this. But it's easier to love. Hate costs you so much. It runs your blood pressure up, gets you in trouble, makes you look at people rambunctiously. Hatred will screw you up, trust me. It will. I don't want to think about things like I'm talking about right now. I don't want to think about it because it's too devastating. To a man 75 years old now. I don't have to wait till tomorrow. I'm 75 now. Because the birth date is February the 8th. But on February the 7th, I was alive in my mother's womb. A human being. I've been in this condition for a little over 75 years now. Because I've been growing in that mother's womb of mine. Then I was born. I'm a human being. I don't remember every meal that I've eaten, but I do recall most of them. And it brought me great joy to eat, to laugh, to love, never to hate. Never to hate. I don't pity people that hate. I regret having met them. I was listening to some tapes of some African-American soldiers during the Vietnam conflict that was stationed in Da Nang, South Vietnam, and they were talking about the day after Martin Luther King was shot and killed. That Confederate flags came up all over and was hanging outside of people's tents and everything like that. And the black soldiers were talking about how they felt about Confederacy. And I have to honestly say, I've never, because I didn't grow up in the South. First time I was called nigger was when I was 19 years old on Hillcrest in Manchester in Inglewood. I told you about that, leaving my job at the International House of Pancakes. But I'm sure I was hated by others. But the hate never jumped on me. I was thinking about my life. I've always obeyed orders. I was that kind of a man. Somebody give you an order, if they had the authority, you obeyed it. Now, if it came against your constitutionality, that's what I'll call it. If it came against your constitutionality, in other words, you are not constituted to do that, well then, yeah, fight that. Be against that. Come against it. For goodness sake, stay against it. But if it ain't gonna cost you nothing, go ahead and do it. You know, you live another day. Oh, you just let them do anything to you. No, I don't. It's not about letting them do anything. I was thinking about this. If the government had something against me, just hear me out a little bit. If the government had something against me and I was some kind of a rebel and I just kept doing things that was pricking them, okay, I would expect them to retaliate, send a missile right down in my house and blow me to smithereens. But I'm not doing anything like that. I'm sure that the government has all the goods on me that they can destroy my life if they wanted to. All they'd have to do is just find my hard drive account and go in there and see every website that I went to and everything and put out a script on me that I didn't do, and blackball me, and I wouldn't hate them. I just said that's what men do. I was working against them, and now they're working against me. And causes, let me tell you something. All lives matter. But most people don't give a damn about anybody else's life but their own, because people are those kinds of people. During the time when faith in God reigns supreme, and you know we hear your president talks like that, everybody. The bottom line is, I believe in God. Do you? God is love, man. Well, look what they've done. What have you done to yourself or for yourself? I had to put out the trash this morning. And I had three big old cans that I had to drag out of the back and put in the front. Ooh, I was panting for fresh air, which was too cold, going in my nostrils. I said, Lord, have mercy. How many more years am I going to have to do this? Well, I'm going to do it because we accumulate trash. Just think about it. If the trash trucks stop picking up trash in Los Angeles, it would be totally unbearable for us to stay in this region. Uninhabitable. We could not live here if we did not have people coming, picking up our trash. Because within a week, rats would be going through everything that we set out in front of our house for nobody to pick up. So order, law and order. I don't know why that is such a hard concept for people to understand. And nowadays, for black people, I don't want to hear about what we went through. What we went through and what we came through, we are the children of slaves. I know what we went through. No, now wait a minute. Since I know that we're the children of slaves, retribution, you say? Well, but what do you want? Well, they owe us 40 acres and a mule. I wouldn't know what to do with the 40 acres, and I darn sure would not know what to do with the mule. Now, I guess if I were from the southern part of the country and I were picking cotton like my ancestors did, I met a man, Lewis, when he first came to the church. And I asked him what he did when he was in Louisiana. And he said, the only thing I could do, pick cotton. I said, what? Now here we're in the 70s and... Yeah, that was in the 70s that he said that to me. I said, what? Pick what? You know, I go to the store, I see a cotton shirt, right? Picking cotton. And he said, "You ever pick cotton?" I said, "I've never seen raw cotton." I was a grown man. I had never seen raw cotton. I think sometimes in the 80s, I had seen pictures of it on television in black and white. I didn't pay too much attention. I said, "Oh, okay." See, I wasn't a sheltered person. I just didn't grow up in that environment, so I didn't have an affinity with it. And that's a difference, my friends. See, when you don't have an affinity with something, and this is what has happened in our communities. We don't have an affinity with how to decently raise our children. Which is ridiculous. You know, my God, I was looking at another special, and it was back in the 80s, of course, when everything was deteriorating in the African American communities, especially in the large inner cities, the ghettos. It's when black women had discovered that they can get more money from the white colonizers if they didn't have a man in the house. In other words, the man was the hallmark foundation that held the black family together, because he was one that would work, teach his son how to work. My daddy taught me, not by setting me down talking with me, but by every morning getting up, going to work. I saw that. So consequently, I put it together. He didn't have to tell me anything. I recall when daddy would get paid, and he got paid every 2 weeks. He worked for the city. He was a garbage man. Before he came, he became an auto parts storekeeper. Oh, yeah. My daddy started collecting garbage for the city in garbage trucks. That's when people would set the garbage out in a garbage bucket in front of their houses. In Los Angeles, I'm telling you. I recall because he was working the route where our house was, and he came by and I saw him empty the garbage out of the garbage can that my mom had set out, and he came and said hello to us, and he was smelling like garbage, and he promoted up and became a driver of one of the trucks where he didn't have to dump, because the only driver that drove the truck when he first came by was a white man. The black man couldn't drive a garbage truck. He can only dump the garbage in the truck. I know. I saw that. I saw my daddy work. You got certain black men won't even do anything of the sort to feed their family. I don't understand this mentality. I really don't. That a man would not do what he's supposed to do in order to take care of his family that God has given him. I do not understand that. I don't hate these lazy sluggards. I'm indifferent towards their indifference towards working. There's a certain amount of pride that a man takes when he knows that he has labored, and then he brings the fruit of his labor home. Daddy used to come home on paydays and Mommy would, I remember it like it was yesterday. Mommy would make one of my favorite dishes, tamale pie. Oh my God, the olives, the cornbread crust, the corn. Oh my God, that was so. And Daddy would come home from work. I remember he would come home and he would bring, we had a little black and white TV. I think it was 9 inches, something like that. The screen, 9 inches wide, something like that. And we would watch movies, black and white movies. Of course, we didn't have a color TV. And he'd buy Big Hunk, Look candy bars, one of those all-day suckers that you'd buy in the theaters. Because the only way that you saw a first-run movie is you went to the Manchester Theater down on Manchester and Broadway to see a movie. I remember it. I'm thinking back. I didn't hate anybody. Oh, there were white people there that sneered us, that didn't want us to be there. I experienced that. It didn't bother me. I've never been the kind of guy that wanted to give the payback. I think I did a webcast about this years ago. I never had a fight in my community with anybody, and the boys up and down the street knew it. And there was a guy that lived down the street, and they edged him on to fight me. Is that my trash truck? Yeah, it is. Let's see. Okay. Emptying the trash. See? Remember what I said? Now, if we didn't have law and order, you wouldn't hear this trash truck emptying these cans like that. No, you wouldn't. But we have law and order. And that guy, every week, on the button, he comes by every Thursday. He's been doing it ever since I've been in this house in 1974. Picking up that trash. Not the same man. Different men. The trucks are different. They're more automated. But I pay taxes. You know what? I just paid the last installment on my taxes this week, as a matter of fact. Because I pay my taxes twice a year. What do you think those taxes are for? It's for that. Sometimes when I help out these young men and they spend a few weeks or months staying with me till they get their head right, I said, you see that trash truck coming by? That's my taxes paying for that. You know, often I would look for a young man and say, well, let me help you with your taxes because I create half the trash around here. None of them ever did that. Ever did that. Another friend of mine told me, I would have told them. I said, come on, man. They saw me paying bills. They saw the tax thing. Look. Stop blaming other people for your malfunction. In other words, you aren't functioning correctly. Let's stop blaming other people for our stupidity. I do not understand a man that is going to father a child. This is a clincher for me. I don't understand a man that's going to father a child and abandon that child, especially if it's a male child. And man, I don't know what's wrong with you dudes. I just don't. And I'm just thinking this about the women. Women, you need to take control of your eating habits, what you're putting in you, and how much of it you're putting in you, and how that stuff destroys your body and your mind, and both the body and mind of your offspring. Why am I still making these statements to people? When I was a pastor, I would tell people about this. I've been doing this since the year 2002 on this website. Just talking to people, saying, come on. As I was listening to that very old recording of some black soldiers from the Vietnam era, some of them died over there. After they made the statement, some of them got back to this country. Some of them are, if they're alive, they're my age now. And I would love to have a conversation with some of these older men. And I wonder if that hatred still exists deep in their hearts. And you know what? Here's another point. You don't find older black men nor older white men going to church because the church has lost its relevance completely. You go to church and hear more venom behind the pulpit than any other place. Look at some of these black pastors, the way they hate Donald Trump. First of all, that's his money. I was reading a report where Donald Trump lost something like, since he's been the president, millions and millions of dollars in business since he's been the president because of a conflict of interest. And you know what? When you say that to practically any black person, they'd be, well, good for him. Hey, you jealous ass fool, shut up. Some people will never have to work. I don't hate them. I'm not jealous of them. I don't want what they have. I remember I was having this conversation with a male friend of mine, and he said, oh, yes, you do. You want it. You want it. You want it just like I want. I said, no, you're a greedy bastard. That's what you are. And then you're looking at the white man, at his wealth, as some European. You want a house overlooking the Mediterranean or in Malta somewhere where you can get up every morning and see the sun come up. Man, don't you know that Mount Vesuvius or whatever will go off again and take all that region out? I recall I was looking at some TV program, beautiful houses around the world, and they went to the Mediterranean, showed all those houses, just beautiful things over there. I said, look at all of that. These people got money. Their families have money. They've had it for years. And when you see the migrants dying on the Mediterranean, drowning in the oceans, coming up on the shores, and they hire these policemen to run these black people out of there, well, why do you think the black people are trying to escape? I remember when Gaddafi was alive. Gaddafi was trying to tell men, they're trying to kill me over here. Didn't nobody want to hear. They killed him. Then they went over there looking for weapons of mass destruction. And they killed the president of that country. I remember when Egypt was going through their deal, and what was happening? The Brits and the French and the Germans and the U.S., the world colonializers, trying to figure out. And look, I'm not mad at nobody, because if I had all the guns and the bullets and everything, and now the tension is in Venezuela. It's not a question of who's on the side of the Venezuelans. That's their country. That's their problem. We really don't have any business as a country putting our nose in it, but a lot of businessmen over here saying, man, we can make some money. Now, we need to make some money. It's more than about making money. Well, I got to get out of here. That phone call was a warning letting me know your time is running out, John. You got to get out of here. Because I have a medical appointment. Hey, listen, thank you for coming to the website. And for those of you that are happy about my life, thank you for the wonderful birthday wishes. It is what it is. God bless you. Stop hating. Start loving.